Morning, Chair.
Morning, Chair.
Morning, Chair.
How are you, Honorable Masiko?
Well, good, thanks. And yourself, Chair?
Yeah, I'm trying to be good. We didn't have electricity since last night. In fact,
recording stopped.
Since 2 o'clock yesterday, there was no electricity until now. I just saw a
recording in progress.
Nkosana saying, "Hooray, electricity buyile." So, morning, honorable members. Morning, commissioners.
Good morning, Chairperson.
How are you?
Morning, Chair.
We are getting
Honorable Sheriff, how are you?
Good morning, Chair. I'm great. How are you? I miss you so much. It's good to see you.
I miss you too. Honorable MPT, how are you? Honorable Makondo, Unjani, Mamsonti, Mr. Akolote,
Mr.
Lobata, how are you? Honorable Stay, Commissioner Biela.
Morning,
Chair. Kazim, how are you?
Morning, Chair. I'm well, thank you.
Kashifa, how are you?
Good morning, Chair members. We good, thank you.
Jalan laban pe IT bangang sabotage. Neliswa. Jalan laban pe IT bangang sabotage.
Hi, sorry. Jendim, bana kunan chena ya zongo.
Ha, kanjani.
Olokaga es motant, olokaga es prayer.
Yo kache, face prayer, che.
Ile ndo zinza yuwen.
Chair, you are muted.
Yo, it doesn't solve on Kosana, it was as true. My apologies, honorable members. I didn't know that Uncle Sana has changed my gadget and wrote something else. You know, maybe I need to start with a prayer verse. Let's have a short prayer so that we can start our meeting. This is our first day in this. Amen. Nelly. Nelly, so.
Morning, Chad. Can you hear me? Yes, 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 Chad. Yes, we can hear you.
Masiko, can you hear me?
Yes, I can clearly hear you, Honorable Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. Yeah, Kosana was trying to sabotage me. My apologies. Good morning, Honorable Members. I welcome you all and compliments of the new year. I miss you very much. And thank you very much, Honorable Masiko and Honorable Members, for continuing to do the work when I was on study leave. Thank you very much for all the work that you've done, even last year before, when my mother passed on. Thank you very much, Honorable Masiko, for being there. For the committee, you continued to do the work of the committee together with the honorable members. There was no distraction or a distraction. You continue doing the work, even in my absentia. And I want to thank you very much for all the work that you've done in my absentia. And thank you for all the messages of support and the flower that you sent to me. To my family, as the portfolio committee, I want to thank you very much. And I want to also thank you, the commissioners who came for the bereavement at my home to give us comfort. And thank you very much. You were there representing CGE, even if you were there, Mam O'Hara, Mam Snomasonto, Advocate Semokale, thank you very much. And all of you who sent me messages of condolences, commissioners and honorable members, thank you very much. May God bless you. We are still trying as the family because, you know, it just happened when we're not expecting it, but we're trying. But at least we're coping. And even those maybe who lost their loved ones, may their soul rest in peace. I think, honorable members, this is going to be a good year. And CGE, I hope we have brought all the reports that you are owing us, because I told Nelly Swa that which are the reports that you need to bring, because we have to finish all the reports that were outstanding from yourselves so that we continue with other things for 2022. Nelly Swa, with that, those few words, I'm declaring this meeting officially open, and we can start. Nelly Swa, can you give us any apology?
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to members and the commissioners and my colleagues. I have received two apologies. One is from Honorable Ntlangwini, who will not be able to attend today's meeting. And the other one is from Dr. Ntambiseng Moleko, who also will not be able to attend the meeting due to other commitments. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, honorable members. What is the first item? Nelly, what's the agenda?
Chair, we have three reports that's going to be presented by CGE. I will go through the reports. As the first report, it's on election and gender mainstreaming, assessing gender issues and women's representation in South Africa, 2019's election. The second one, it's Commission for Gender Equality Report, on balancing the scales, reviewing development in women's representation in politics and government between 2014 and 2019. And the last one, it's bound by duty to care, assessing correctional services on the health and welfare services for female offenders, 2018. And then we'll go to adoption of minutes and consideration of the first term committee program. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, I see a message from Honorable Sharif that we have a new Honorable Ntombi Khumalo.
Yes, Chair. She's a new MP that hasn't been assigned to a committee yet, and she just asked me if you'll be okay with her attending the meeting as a guest.
No, the member. It's fine.
Perfect. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Can we see her?
Chair, I just wanted to get permission before I send the link.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Honorable Tlobat, Commissioner Tlobatla, I'm sure now you are feeling better.
Yes, Chairperson, I feel happy, blessed, and highly favored, done with chemotherapy. It was very aggressive, but I thank God for it. Whatever that was damaged by it, I trust God to restore it. And thank you very much for all the prayers and for all the support from members of the PTC and also from the commissioners in the Commission for Gender Equality. I have to state it that the commissioners were very supportive indeed. They even came to my house during that difficult time where I was told that I have a couple of weeks to leave because at that time, my lungs were collapsing drastically. I was attached to something to survive. But the commissioners took the time, came to my house, supported us. I really appreciate everything that they did. And I also appreciated the chairperson of the portfolio committee in her capacity as the chair. You were keeping tabs, sending verses, motivation, and everything. You gave us the strength that we needed. And everybody that I haven't mentioned, I appreciate the support and everything. And be blessed always. I'm a fighter. I will pull through, as you can see on yourself. I believe in God's report more than in the doctor's report. That's why I'm still standing, Chair. Thank you.
Amen. Thank you very much, Honorable Commissioner Tlobatla. Robertla, we thank God for your life, because you know, immediately after 2 weeks after my mother's funeral, the late honorable Dumankosi was at my mother's funeral, and he came to me and said, "I'm not gonna go with you to the cemetery because I'm not feeling well." And I'm waiting for my day. And little did I know that he was saying goodbye, because after 2 weeks, he passed on. So we buried him on Christmas Eve, and may his soul rest in peace. Thank you very much, Honorable Member. Honorable Ntombi has joined the meeting. Can you please open your camera so that we know who the person is?
Morning, colleagues. I'm actually struggling on this device. Maybe I must just log on my laptop, then I'll be able to open the camera. Chair, but thank you so much for welcoming me and allowing me into the committee meeting.
Okay. Thank you very much. You're welcome. Okay, let's move to the first item. Over to you. I don't know whether it's the chair or the CEO or the deputy chair. Oh, by the way, the deputy chair has forwarded an apology. Let's get the presentation from CGE.
Thank you and good morning, Chair. Compliments to you and to the rest of the members. I think when we met on the 25th of January, we sent our compliments to the new year, Chair, to everyone. And I'm happy to be back at work, all of us. And Chair, I just want to say that this morning we are invited to present three reports to the Portfolio Committee. These reports that we will be presenting this morning, I think what will be key will be to really share with members of the Portfolio Committee the findings as well as the recommendations of these three reports. Chair, with your permission, may I switch off my camera as my internet is fluctuating this morning. Chairperson, the CEO will be presenting three reports. And the first report, Chair, is titled Bound by Duty to Poor. It is a report, it's a research report that was conducted between the year or the financial year 2017-2018. And basically this research work was assessing the status of the correctional services, in particular the health and welfare services that are rendered to female offenders in South Africa. So it actually looked at a number of things following the admission of an offender and following the screening process that is usually followed in these places. And they basically look at communicable diseases and non-communicable diseases, and then the treatment and care is then prescribed following the thorough assessment of an offender. Whilst the second, the two reports, Chair, basically are focusing on elections. So the first election report, basically, it's around the 2014 and the 2019 report. And this report is titled, I'll remember, Balancing the Scale. And basically, this report explored women representations, not only that, but also participation in politics and how women are also participating in government, and basically talks about the work between 2014 and the 2019 election. So there's quite a lot to share in this report in terms of the findings and the recommendations in as so far as participation as well as inclusion of women, both in politics and in government. The second on the last report on elections, Chair, looked at elections and gender mainstreaming. And basically, we all know the term gender mainstreaming. Basically, it really describes how in each and every process, whether you are planning, whether you are budgeting, whether you are monitoring and evaluating, or whether you are implementing a program or a project, you are supposed to put a gender lens in your intervention. So basically, this was assessing, you know, gender mainstreaming, assessing gender and women's representation in the 2019 and the 2019 election. Chair, without waste of time, I would request the CEO to take the floor and beam the first presentation and present accordingly. Thank you for the opportunity, Chair.
Oh, Chair, my apologies. I didn't see that you are in. Thank you very much for the support you gave me also during my mother's bereavement. And also you came to the funeral. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Good morning and Happy New Year. Good morning to Honorable members and to commissioners and colleagues. May I switch off my camera as I project the presentations. If I may be allowed, perhaps because of the three presentations, two are very much related. So I wanted to request if I can start with the correctional services presentation and then do the other two together as they speak to each other. I will just project. Sorry, looks like I projected the wrong one. Please bear with me. Thank you, Honourable Members and Honourable Chair, Commissioners. May I check if the presentation is projecting?
Yes.
Thank you. As the Chair has already introduced the presentation, this is a study that was conducted in the 2017-18 financial year to assess correctional services for health and wellness of women prisoners. Just as a way of introducing the study, as a matter of practice, we usually provide a background on the CGE mandate and the legislation that governs the work that we do. Obviously, starting with the Constitution and the CGE Act, you have your PEPUDA, and I will run through this, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, as these are some of the legislative background that we are familiar with as prescripts that govern the work that we do as the Commission for Gender Equality, including those that are listed there, national, regional, and international instruments that we are actually operationalizing as we conduct this work in the CGE. The purpose of the study, as has already been indicated, was to assess the extent to which the Department of Correctional Services is upholding the human rights of female inmates in their correctional facilities, especially from a health perspective. And the study was based on qualitative research
6 correctional centers were selected for this study, and various participants, as listed in the slide, were either interviewed or engaged in focus group discussions, and also observations were conducted in line with issues raised by the Judicial Inspectorate. So some of the questions that were asked were verified through observations and also through requesting related documents to what was being said. And I'm just giving this brief background in the methodology to set the context for the findings. As indicated, focus groups were conducted separately because we're between correctional officials and inmates to allow for the different groups to be able to be open with their responses as they were being engaged in this research. And as indicated, mainly the in-depth interviews were conducted with the officials from the department. This is just a breakdown of the number of participants in the 6 correctional centers that were assessed in these 6 provinces, so to speak. So we selected 1 per province in the study. In terms of language, English was used, with translations where the need arose, and semi-structured and open-ended questions were used to collect information for all the participants. And as indicated, supporting documents were also collected to verify the information that had been provided through the interviews and the focus group discussions. Issues of ethics were obviously attended to, especially in this environment. Issues of voluntary participation, consent, and guaranteeing confidentiality and anonymity was very important in terms of trying to facilitate proper participation in the study. The limitations, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, are your usual limitations in many of our studies, but specifically in the prison environment, the controlled nature of the environment tends to limit people from being outspoken for fear of repercussions and so forth. Whether real or perceived, these are some of the limitations that come to play when you conduct research where you need information to assess the performance of institutions, because the outlook is that we all want to be seen to be doing what we are charged to do. So unfortunately, this does, in some cases, pose as a limitation. And in some places during the study, the availability of professionals was a bit of a challenge because these are people who are, they serve different facilities. You make an appointment with them and come the day, they are no longer available. But these were just some of the issues that we thought we should highlight in terms of the limitations of the study. The site visits to the different centers were limited to 3 days as per the plan of the study. And in many instances, cooperation was not freely forthcoming, as I have already pretty much indicated. Now coming to the findings and starting with the Johannesburg Correctional Center in Gauteng. here, one of the main findings was the overcrowding in the prison. As we can see there, if you look at the numbers, what the center was is designed to accommodate, and the number that it accommodated, overcrowding of about 60%, which is really significant and risky, if you like. Luckily, it was before COVID when this study was conducted, but still there are many other communicable diseases that may pose a risk around issues of overcrowding. One of the good things, which is common in perhaps all the SIPs correctional centers, is that they do accommodate mother and baby. They have mother and baby units, and in this instance, at the time of this study in the Johannesburg Center, they had 21 mothers and babies. They also have a section where they have medium-term offenders, and generally this is the section that is more overcrowded than any other section in the facility. And generally there was a problem of shortage of hot water due to the aging in infrastructure of the building, though it was overall kept well in terms of neatness, so to speak. Some of the services that we looked at that are provided to female inmates, it's quite a list, but I'll just go through them one each. And summarizing, in terms of healthcare, perhaps I need to indicate, because it will come up in the next slides, that since we interviewed inmates and officials separately, you tend to find contradictory information, in a sense that inmates perceive their situation in one way, whereas officials may perceive the situation in a different way. But when we looked at healthcare services, we found that the center had a screening process for offenders from admission actually until they settle in the facility. And issues of oral and physical examinations were mentioned. Although, as I said, when you talk to inmates, they will tell you that some of the physical examination or none at all were conducted, only oral examinations were conducted, and so forth. And the physical examinations, which are, in a sense, even more important, because sometimes this is where you can miss some key health issues that are not necessarily visible by just looking at a person. But these are some of the issues that obviously when we make recommendations, it will be clear that we need to be able to advise the department to how health services are provided to female inmates in these centers, though you can't necessarily do away with different perceptions between officials and inmates. Also to note was that pregnant offenders were immediately booked in the mother and baby unit, and they were referred to the nearest hospitals to give birth when the time arrived. And they received all the antenatal programs and postnatal services from the hospitals. And obviously, they are always escorted, sometimes by nurses or sometimes by social workers. Also to note, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members and Commissioners, is that around issues of HIV and AIDS, where inmates were examined and perhaps found to be positive, They were provided by with treatment and different treatments relating to different sexually transmitted diseases, all the common diseases that are transmissible. Inmates generally were given treatment and referred where necessary for the necessary services, for the doctors, for physical examinations, sometimes for psychological services. But obviously, again, the inmates would be complaining about the shortage of supplies, where they would say, for any pain you complain about, you will be given a Panado or ibuprofen, regardless of what kind of ailment is causing the pain. So these are just some of the portions of the health services that are provided, or shall I say that were provided in this center at the time of the study, which is about 3 to 4 years back now. In terms of psychological programs, you had clinical psychologists who provided the necessary services. Hello? Sorry, Honorable Chair, there was a sound coming through. Psychological services are also provided, they are based on referrals from either doctors or nurses or social workers who have interacted with the inmates, and should they find the need for any kind of psychological service, then they would refer. But these were also available in the center. The major area of treatment inmates included, as it may be expected, issues of depression, anxiety, parenting behind bars, and the inability to attend family events. I think these are issues that
under this. Mamsondi, sicela ukuthi umute.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. To continue looking at social work services that were provided, they had these services in the center. And again, the services related to coping with the situation of being incarcerated, especially for young mothers who would need to be assisted with parenting skills. So social workers.
I'm sorry,
Thanks again, Honorable Chair. Some of the social work programs generally were to assist mothers to cope with separation from their children, because the Act, the Correctional Services Act, requires that after 2 years, the child must be removed from the facility. So naturally, I mean, I think the problems that are identified around here that require these services have to do with the natural reaction or natural response to a particular situation. So having your child having to be removed from you as a mother after 2 years, it's one of those traumatic situations that women inmates have to deal with in these facilities. The services to put children into foster care, and this can be complicated because then you now have to look at whether the mother is volunteering for the child to be put in foster care, whether they have a choice or not. But these are some of the issues that they have to deal with, especially those who are foreign nationals, where you will find that their embassies would have to be contacted for a child to be placed with a foster family, highly likely outside the country, obviously, as the situation would dictate. And in some of the focus group discussions, the inmates were largely happy with social work services, given the problems that were being dealt with. So having highlighted these issues, they felt that they were getting some good services around that kind of support that is required. In terms of nutrition, obviously all meals were provided, but when it comes to food generally, you will find that there are those that feel that the nutrition is not geared to certain needs, for example, around pregnant women, the particular diet that they require. Sometimes it's a one-size-fits-all, but these are, again, other nuances around preferences or perceptions and so forth around, the kind of meals that inmates are provided. Also, issues of sanitary towels, these are some of the things, and these are like common across the centers that were looked at. There are slight differences, as we will see as the presentation continue, but generally you find that basic services are provided. In terms of staffing and capacity, the majority of the center staff were female, and this obviously is typical of patriarchal societies. Care services are usually done by females. Also in these centers, the nurses, the social workers, and so forth were mainly females. And it looks like there was only one male in this particular center. And generally, the staff were complaining about work overload, citing that sometimes they get assistance from NGOs in their local vicinities. In terms of skills training for the staff and officials, the department does provide your regular routine trainings for staff. But there is an expectation that all officials and professionals are aware of the legislative frameworks that guide the work that they do. But experience, I'm sure Honorable Chair and Honorable Members will agree that experience has taught us throughout the years of research and observation that it is not necessarily true that people are aware of the legislation that govern the work that they do, because often we find that there are gaps in this area, especially as it pertains to human rights issues and also in conditions of imprisonment, as is the case in this study. The Bizama Kati Female Correctional Center in the Free State. Here you had the issue of overcrowding was not an issue. They actually had space in this regard. So this is the slight difference from the Johannesburg Center. And you had a situation where the place was generally kept clean. The cells were ventilated. So generally this facility, in terms of the aesthetics, it was good or better compared to other facilities that we will present in this report. And they also appeared to be complying with the National Health Act in terms of their practices, the services they provided as prescribed by the Act. But in the kitchen, again, you had a situation where there was complaints about the shortage of equipment, and the place was said to be dilapidated, so to speak, perhaps due to the age of the facility. The facility also provided general health care services, just like the Johannesburg Center. On arrival, female inmates were assessed, and issues covered included the pregnancy status, if pregnant, gestational period, all the reproductive health issues, and the immunization of babies, especially babies who came in with their mothers when they were incarcerated. So all those kinds of health assessments were done. The assessments also focused on the history of the inmate or the child, their childhood illnesses, their history of sexual assault and rape. So all these kind of reproductive health services were found to be provided, though there were inconsistencies in relation to the application of these assessment procedures, because in the focus discussions, the inmates were saying that not all of them were assessed according to the prescribed procedures. So it came across like in some situations, one will even call it shortcuts, so to speak, were observed. And these were the experiences of inmates during the study. Also, the lack of physical examination placed inmates at a risk of catching contagious diseases. So here, standard procedure seemed to be an issue. And also in this center, some of the health risks and challenges that were detected were reported, included undetected pregnancies. Sorry, just one second. There were inmates who also defaulted from their antiretroviral treatments, untreated sexually transmitted diseases, and so forth. So you had all these other problems that inmates brought in, that some of which were not detected, which can actually pose a risk to the rest of the inmates in their facility. Again, as in the other facility, the pregnant inmates did receive ANC, as in antenatal care services, from local hospitals. Primary health care to babies was also provided. Although some mothers complained about the quality of medical care and that their babies often get sick, the mothers also complained about the shortage of formula, milk formula, shortage of clothing, and also that the center often relied on donations from local NGOs for these services that were lacking in the center. Women-specific health care services were provided. Women-specific in a sense of reproductive health care, as listed initially, also HIV AIDS and treatment, as with the other center. But the, one of the few challenges that they had is that they had only one doctor who was responsible for 14 centers, so it was hard to find the services of the doctor, where the nurses had to fill in often when the doctor is not around, which now created the workload that they complained about. In terms of psychological programs, again, the findings here are not too different from what we found in the Johannesburg Center. So the referrals, the psychological services, health services, all those kinds of services were provided. But again, there's always some downside of these issues, because sometimes it was said that some staff, nursing staff, did not perceive mental illness issues seriously. Obviously, they have their own suspicion when someone reports with issues, them not being psychologists and them being the point at which referral should happen. If they don't take this seriously, this may be problematic. Sometimes this may necessarily be because they are not trained to detect mental health issues. So these are some of the problems that we observed in this center. Social work services were also provided, mainly to assist inmates with domestic issues, those who were struggling to cope behind bars, those who have left young children and spouses, you know, all these kinds of issues that are common under these circumstances. But there were programs that were offered to inmates, including anger management services, substance abuse, and so forth. Counseling was provided. Nutrition, the center was found to cater for unique hygiene needs of the female inmates through the provision of sanitary towels and other toiletries. The nutrition was based at the center, designed as a special dietary program for inmates. And this is where pregnant inmates would report that at least their diet was given some considerations. Although, again, there were complaints about poorly cooked food, and that some would say their specific needs are not catered for, especially for lactating women. The staffing issues in this center, they indicated that the budgetary allocation was inadequate to cater for the health and wellness of the inmates. The officials also referred to the shortage of relevant equipment and supplies, as indicated. An example was the state of the kitchen. They also talked about the fact that the center's medical equipment were donated, so this does not seem sustainable in terms of the systems in the facility. Training was also provided, as in the previous center. Although the warders were found to be ill-prepared to handle female inmates and were sometimes harsh and insensitive to their needs and circumstances, some talked about the warders who would regularly dismiss their ailments as attention-seeking. Some were uninformed about health and reproductive rights. And this can be expected because warders generally are not people who are trained in healthcare. So unfortunately, if nurses and warders and social workers are not working in an integrated manner, you'll find those situations where inmates sometimes experience some dissatisfaction in how they are treated by different categories of staff. the Western Cape Paul Small Center. This was generally an aging building with aging infrastructure in some sections with water leakages from the roof, you know, paint peeling and so forth. So this is like a derelict kind of building, one can put it that way. And again, the issue of its age becomes apparent. But the facility was generally clean. It was providing mainly most of the needs of the female inmates, including the inmates with babies in the mother and baby unit. Again, these are the common aspects that I have mentioned earlier. Communal cells were generally not in a good state. And sometimes you had single cells were better, but sometimes you had overcrowding where a single cell would be accommodating, for instance, three offenders. The issues of smoking, as we can imagine, sometimes it's hard to quit even when you are in areas that don't allow for smoking, especially around babies and secondhand smoking. The center had a 10-bed hospital in the premises, and its consultation and voluntary counseling testing rooms were also accredited sites. Again, the medical screening was done as in the previous centers. They had an in-house doctor who had two sessional doctors and four nurses. The inmates complained about nurses not being accessible. Again, common problems. In cases of emergencies, the center referred to patients to Rochester or Victoria Hospital. Some inmates claim that one has to be dying before referred to hospital. Again, it's that issue of how people are perceived under these circumstances. Are you really sick or are you seeking attention? That kind of attitude, which sometimes can be detrimental because you cannot be sure. The center did not provide reproductive services such as pap smears, antenatal care, and so forth. Babies born to mothers within the facility were sent to a nearby clinic for immunization. The psychological services, they had them on site, and the social work program, they also had this on site, even though according to some of the officials, the process of the placing of babies outside the center once they are the age of over the age of two often took too long to complete. And again, this speaks to all the processes required, having to separate the mother from the child from the mother and finding them a place where they can be cared for. The issue of food, again, there were complaints. Pregnant women and mothers with babies were placed on a different nutritional program, which was commended. So they didn't have the same complaints as the general female inmates in the center. And one of the disturbing findings, as it stated in the last bullet, that some of the inmates said that when they were seeing their periods, the warders would say, "Show, and I will give you practice of rationing of supply of sanitary pads." So you had to show the blood for you to be given sanitary pad, which is totally undignified and the violation of a person's rights, so to speak. In terms of staffing, again, there were complaints about the lack of budget. The mother and baby unit was said to have limited resources and relied on donors and relatives of inmates to contribute supplies. And it was also mentioned that the shortage of staff, because of the shortage of staff, they face severe work overload. And this is generally common in most of the facilities. The training, again, some of the officials indicated that only rudimentary training was offered during induction. They pointed to the lack of training, especially to handle challenges related to mental health issues and disability, including gender-related skills training. So while other centers, you had a sense that your routine training was provided, but in this center, it became clear that certain specific skills that are required to work with female inmates were not necessarily provided. In terms of recommendations, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we, the CGE, feel that in order to address the issue of inadequate training and capacity building, it is recommended that the department should carry out a skills audit of key personnel that work directly with inmates, female inmates, to develop a clear long-term development strategy. And this can be done through CETAS. We have training and development CETAS that provide funding in this regard. So this can be motivated for. And the long-term strategy should be supported by the development of annual skills plans with clear allocation of financial resources. Because sometimes we provide policies and guidelines, but not the means to implement them. So this is one of the recommendations that were provided to the department. And they also need to conduct a thorough needs analysis for the centers. As we have seen, some centers are overloaded, some are not. And so you have different experiences and allocation of resources across the centers. So if the department could do a needs analysis so that resources are allocated according to evidence-based needs of these centers so that the allocation of resources is not skewed. A clear program of collaboration with the relevant NGOs is also necessary because you have civil society organizations that work with these centers. But if this is not entered into in a formal manner, it's almost like and it's not sustainable. One can put it that way. So some form of sustainability is required around this. In terms of, given that the overcrowding contribute to the burden of prison resources and exacerbate the transfer of diseases, greater effort to reduce overcrowding, such as diversion programs for women and juvenile offenders from criminal justice system, is recommended so that you don't, we saw in the beginning of the presentation that you had overcrowding in units where they have medium-term offenders. So other programs can be created and so that these are not, people are not necessarily locked up and wait for too long before they are charged or sentenced and so forth, which only contributes to overcrowding. A policy also to regulate supply and distribution of supplies in prisons is required so that things are not done haphazardly. Instead, this again is a matter of resources and equal distribution. Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members and Commissioners.
Thank you very much, CEO. Umas sale document a la CEO. Ahora sí llegué la. CEO Yangis.
Yeah.
Yangito.
Yebo, Chair. Bengithi, shall I go to the next presentation?
No, let's engage on this one.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation that you've done and for the research that we have done as CGE. But I think I've got a few questions that I want to ask you. Have you shared this report with the Department of Justice and Correctional Services? That's one, because it entails things that they are responsible for as the Justice Portfolio Committee. That's one, because I'm thinking now that I'm sure you would have shared the report with the department or the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Correctional Services. Two, regarding this report, which of these recommendations have been implemented so far? Because by now, at least if you have shared that report with the Justice Department or a Portfolio Committee on Justice, they should have started implementing some of the recommendations that you are recommending as the CGE. And then I think I'm trying to read this report. I know that the Department of Correctional, the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Correctional Services, they were doing oversight over AMA prisons. I'm sure we'll get their feedback. They will tell us how is the state now of those prisons. We'll hear from them, because you see, it will be unfair that you have done a research on the correctional services but you haven't communicated or presented your outcomes or your findings to them. You know, I was looking at, in the meeting of the chairpersons, there were many reports that were coming from ECGE. But you know, some of those reports were not supposed to be tabled to us, you know, as the Portfolio Committee. I think what's best is that you can give us those reports and share them with us. But I'm sure it's also proper that some of those reports, you share them with the relevant departments and the Portfolio Committee, you know, so that if you make recommendations, they are able, you know, to fast track and go and implement the recommendations that you have made. So that your reports must not just be reports for a talk show, which is, here are the findings, this is what we are recommending, but there's no one who's tracking if whatever you have recommended is being implemented by the department. So I just wanted to raise these a few comments and you know, my questions. And let me get hands of the honourable members in this report.
CEO, ungayisusa kancane le report le. Khona uzokwazi ukubona izandla. Honorable Sheriff, Honorable Mamsonti, Honorable Masondo, Honorable Masiko, Honorable Kumalo.
Chair, please note me, it's Hlongo. I can't put my hand up.
Honorable Hlongo. Manu Engamshiz. Babu Ngobo, Bonga Pendulam, Bonga Paramisam.
Eben Paramsile, Chair.
Ogo Tinyak Pegala, Angobon, Angazu Tuayinga Goni. Okay, in that order, Honorable Sheriff.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you to the CGE for giving us the report.
Mpiti, sorry, Honorable Sheriff. Mpiti, I think you're number three, ne?
Yes, that's correct, Chair. Yeah.
Okay. No, number three is Mason.
But I've noted, I was just double checking. Okay, in that order, thank you, Honorable Sheriff.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, let me start by saying it is unfortunate when reports come to our committee 3 or 4 years later after the fact, because things might have changed and getting old information makes it a bit difficult to ensure proper oversight is happening and to ensure that recommendations are being implemented. You know, when I look at the presentation, there's obviously issues around the correctional services that house women. And this is something that, you know, as the committee, we should be made aware about. So if need be, we can have a joint sitting with the portfolio committee on correctional service to see what has actually been happening in these centers. Now, a lot of people might argue that, you know, these are inmates who should not be getting, you know, the five-star treatment. But at the end of the day, human dignity is human dignity. No matter who you are, no matter where you come from, you should be given the bare minimum of human dignity so that you can live a life of dignity. And it really bothers me when this report speaks about how dignity is being taken away from women, especially, you know, with that, with Paulsmoore having to show and tell. That's absolutely disgusting, and we should, you know, not accept any of that behavior, no matter who we are. So I just wanted to note that. Chair, in the beginning of the report, the purpose for the research was to determine if the Department of Correctional Services is upholding human rights, female human rights, and we didn't get an answer from the CGE on that. So I just wanted to find out from your research, is the Department of Correctional Services upholding human rights in these centers? In terms of cooperation, you know, I always find it so frustrating, and I imagine for the CGE and the commissioners, how much more frustrating it is when you're going to do your job. You're literally a Chapter 9 institution that is mandated to do this. You get to these centers and you don't get cooperation. For me, it's very suspicious, number one, because if everything was going smooth and well, nobody would have an issue with you coming to do the investigation. So I just wanted to find out, was the lack of cooperation only limited to time for interviews with officials and supporting documents? What else were you, you know, did you not get the cooperation for? Can you maybe give more detail? And how much of a concern is this CEO for the CGE to find ways that you can do your job more effectively by getting more cooperation from these entities and government officials? In terms of the Johannesburg Correctional Center, and I think for all of them, you gave us the breakdown of the staff components, but you didn't and you spoke about how all of the care workers are female, but you didn't break down how many of the wardens are female versus how many of the wardens are male. And I think this is important because a lot of the training and skills development aspect the CGE was speaking about, but that these wardens don't know how to deal with women or deal with women issues. And this raises massive red flags for me, because if you're going to be working with women, the least you should do is have that minimum training of the care, the special needs that women, especially pregnant women, need. So if I could just get answers around that. Of course, Paulsmoor, man, you know, it's so bad, because when you watch documentaries on the male side of Paulsmoor prison, it's extremely scary to see how what actually goes on. And then to have this report that shows, you know, evidence that the same thing sort of happens in the women's prison is very concerning, Chairperson. And this is something that, you know, we really need to look at and maybe speak to the portfolio of DSC so that we can come together and find, you know, solutions that may help these women and keep their dignity. The issues around psychological support is obviously it's mainstream. And for me, this is another massive issue, because when you go to prison, a lot of people, you know, sometimes get onto drugs and they become drug addicts and they rely on drugs or they rely on violence. And mental health support and psychological assistance is where we can actually break the chain of violence and the chain of drug dependency. And this is something, you know, that shouldn't just be on the side. It's something that DSC really must focus on and put together a plan to how do we get more psychologists into these spaces. And Cher, let me tell you, you go to Wits University, you go to UCT, you go to all of these universities and you have so many people studying psychology. You know, I don't see why, you know, we can't rope them in and, you know, get assistance from master students, from PhD students that need to do practicals. And this might be a way to have a collaboration so that inmates get the psychological and mental health needs, and at the same time you have PhD students, master students getting their practical in. So it's a win-win situation for everybody. But psychological need is super important, especially in correction. When inmates get released, we don't want them to come back. We want them to start a new life and live, you know, a life that they best can. And we can only do this through psychological intervention and helping these inmates where we can to break these cycles. So
psychological support, it also goes to the prison warders.
100%.
Yeah, absolutely. Because also they do need that. I thought that this report will also cover even the issue of the prison warders.
Naturally, Chair, from the report, it mentions that they're overworked, overstressed, and probably underpaid. So I imagine that there's a lot of issues around there. So I think, Chair, you know, wrapping up, I think thank you for the report. Can we please make sure in future we get reports timelessly so that we can actually do something about it and you know, speak to the relevant portfolio committee so that we can find solutions, because that's what we're here to do. We're here to assist and provide recommendations and make sure it's being implemented. Thank you, Chair. I'll just leave it there for now. I don't want to take any other points from other colleagues so that I could give everybody a chance to engage. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Sheriff. That's why I said we must just engage on this report first. Mam Sonti, siyacela ukuthi masisemithingini uzame ukuyimutha i-mic yakho. Ngoba
uCalo
bega present this disturbance kakhulu.
Ngicela uxolo, Chair.
Okay.
Good morning, Chairperson and the colleagues, and also the CGE. Okokuqala, Chairperson, I'd like to talk about the Paulsmoor. So I just want to ask, what is the plan from CGE to improve the situation which are you experiencing in these correctional services on female inmates, especially to those females who died before they referred to hospital? because it shows that a lack of witness or slowly attention comes from the side of health. Also, the males, which is not same to the female inmates. The last one, Chairperson, also blaming the Department of Justice in this case. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, Honorable Pitti.
Thank you very much, Chair. They're just speaking for me, and one of them is actually related to the point that you raised. I think the report as tabled by the CE is making some really substantive issues that are happening in the process. And I really wonder what is the approach that is being taken in terms of the outcomes of this report and how they're going to be.
Mr. Mazibugo, go unmute your mic. Commissioner Mazibugo.
I'm muted, Chair. Sorry.
Okay, over to you, Honorable Mpiti. Sorry for that.
No problem. Thanks, Chair. So the point really that I'm trying to make is around the issue of how exactly do we, how do we move from this report being, put together and a number of concerns that are being raised in this report. Is what exactly is the way forward in terms of this report actually finding its way to the Department of Correctional Services? What is the, in terms of the process flow, what is that plan? Because I would imagine that there's some form of transversal approach that is required in terms of the recommendations that are being made in the report. And exactly how are we, or how does the CGE plan to take this report forward? I'm interested to hear, I don't know if there's anyone here from the department, but what exactly is the department's view on this particular report? Are there any plans in which the department plans to respond to this particular report? Because obviously it finds itself within the mandate of the department to be able to really from an executive point of view, be able to work with other departments that are concerned in this particular report to make sure that the issues that are being raised are being addressed. Because I would then understand that the role of the CGE in producing this report is exactly fulfilling their mandate, which is to make sure that they monitor and make sure that we live in a just country where people are given the resources that they require. And so I think that would be the role of the CGE to be able to provide effective monitoring on the issues that relate to gender equality. But now the department also needs to come in very strongly in responding to the recommendations that are being made. And I think it really does call for us as a committee perhaps to either put forward the suggestion of a joint committee so that we understand from the Department of Correctional Services what are the views on the report and what are the type of actions that are going to be taken to deal with the issues that are being raised. The last point really, which I think for me is what stood out the most from the report, was the issue around mental health and mental health services. And this is for both, inmates, but also for the people who are dealing with, a lot of the matters that are coming through within these environments. And I think we've seen that in a lot of the work that is being done, particularly with gender-based violence, and a number of things that this portfolio committee deal with, that there's hardly ever discussions around, assistance for frontline workers who are dealing with very traumatic events and situations within the areas of work. And then you find that, you know, a lot of the people who are ultimately impacted suffer some form of, you know, mental breakdown, or are unable to actually continue, you know, in the job because it's so much emotional and mental strain. So I do think that that is something that comes out very strongly, and that that is something that really needs to be considered, particularly from a departmental aspect. The department needs to be able to start looking at the prioritization of mental health services for frontline workers, particularly those who are dealing with a lot of traumatic issues on the ground. And of course, if the core mandate and the core KPIs and all of that do not speak to those things, I think those things need to now start to form part of those things, particularly as we go into a new financial year and we start to review our key performance indicators. These are some of the things that really, really, really need to be prioritized. And as well as, you know, that form of debrief that needs to happen, I think is fundamentally important to those who are very much involved. I think in general, Chair, in my closing, I think the issues that are being raised are fundamentally concerning, as has been pointed out. And I really do think that, you know, if we look at what we discussed last week and the recommendations from the reports that we saw from, you know, various universities, etc., that these reports can't simply just be produced and presented. There must be core actions that need to be taken fundamentally by all stakeholders that are involved. And obviously, because this is within the scope of this portfolio committee, we must, I think, you know, from the conclusion of this meeting, take key, clear positions on how do we take these reports forward so that they do not fall away within the cracks. There has to be definitive approaches on how we actually remedy and deal with the concerns that have been raised. Thank you, Chair.
Oh, okay. So today I was covering you. We have already discussed on how should these reports be processed. Because truly speaking, Honorable MPT, I don't want to find myself discussing reports and there's no action. You know, I'm a practical person. If there's a report that is presented before the portfolio committee, that report, it means it needs to be attended to. So there must be interventions by a respective department or entities. It can be correct that CGE will do research. You see, there's a lot of money that is spent to do those research. So we can't, there must be value for money that after we have done the research, what is it that has been done by any department or any government entity? So I think, firstly, Honorable Mpit, what needs to be done by CGE is that as and when they do research, they need also to identify and which department, this report, it falls under which department, so that they also go to that portfolio committee or the department itself, so that when they come to our portfolio committee and present a report, Tina will be able to make follow-up on the things that already they've been presented to them, but they've done nothing. So that we action these reports. Zingatani for years and years, Kunguti, they are not attended to. And that they are just reports that are piling up at CGE. Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Mpiti. Honorable Masondo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, all members of Parliament and the staff that you are with us, the officials. And I would like to welcome the report that is presented to us. Chair, I'm having a concern in the three provinces that are not included. I just want to get from CGE, maybe are they going to conduct another research for Northern Cape, Eastern Cape and Mpumalanga, or maybe they are covered in other provinces because others, the inmates, they are taken to another provinces. But I just want to get a clarity on the, because they are not included in the six provinces that are mentioned here. And the other one, we have persons with disabilities in prison by saying they are there, that they are having mental health. It means we have people with disabilities. Are they getting help there, health-wise? Because if we are taking them in prison, maybe there is some research that must be done for them, that they are going to be healed or whatever. What are they going to help them, the people with disabilities? Did CGE present?
Honorable Masondo?
Yes, Chair.
Are you talking about the needs of the disabled people holistically? Because
yes.
Once you don't consider other issues of disability and you focus on e-health pillar, we'll miss a point. So what
yes,
I'm
trying to
is to deal with those holistically?
Yes, Chair. Yes. The CGE presented the report to the Department of Women with Persons with Disabilities before it comes to APC. I just want to get it clarity there. I said the Cosmo prison has got a problem. The situation there is not good. We need to improve the plan to improve the situation. So I think the chairperson has mentioned earlier on about the Department of Correctional Services to be included, that I think is them that are going to take that decision. But if they were contacted already, I think we are going to ask for another report, the detailed report one. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, thank you, Honorable Masondo. What we are going to do as the Portfolio Committee will write to them if whether they did receive this report, and if not, they must attend. Our secretary will then furnish them with the report so that they can look at it. It portfolio committee on injustice. Masiko?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and greetings to your good self and all the honorable members and commissioners on the platform. Chairperson, I think today you have fully covered us. One will firstly welcome the report that we have received from CGE, but also we'll go back to the issues that we had asked last week on the very same report that we had received. In relation to the consultation process, Honorable Chairperson, of these reports, I know that you have mentioned it, and so has Honorable Pity, with regards Honorable Chairperson, that as much as yes, we are dealing with the Department of Correctional Services, but in the same report, there are strong recommendations as well as concerns from the report that touch on the Department of Social Development as well as the Department of Health in relation to the services that ought to be rendered to the women inmates. Of concern, Honorable Chairperson, that I've also noted is the issue of the recommendations from the report itself. We have noted a number of concerns that have been relating to the findings in all the prisons, especially in Cosmo Prison. But with regards to the recommendations, Chairperson, some of the concerns that have been noted have not been fully covered in the recommendations, but probably maybe it's a summary of the recommendations that are appearing in the report. We might as well just go through the entire report. Maybe in terms of the recommendations will be covered. Yes, Chair.
Can you try to help us on which one you feel strong?
An example, Chairperson, that came out strongly is in relation to the challenges that women with children are facing who are incarcerated. They had noted within the report that some mothers do not have full access to baby clothes, because we are relying, or they are relying mainly on NGOs, support from donors and NGOs. But that matter, Chairperson, is not covered in the recommendation. And I was quite interested to see what the recommendation would say in relation to that specific matter on the women that have given birth whilst in incarceration. That alone is not captured in the recommendations, because for me it would be important to look into the relationship between, or the working relations between, the Department of Correctional Services as well as the Department of Social Development when it comes to this one specific matter. Another issue, Chairperson, that we need to note, and I'm not sure whether there's any scientific analysis to this, is that most women, you'd expect that some of the women, if not most, that have been incarcerated have a certain history, Chairperson, with issues prior to their imprisonment and the way in which they live their lives, which have contributed to their imprisonment. You know that some women have experienced victimization prior to imprisonment. You know that some are coming from unstable family lives. Some have dropped out of school, and some have challenges or have experienced challenges at work, as well as substance abuse and mental health problems. Now, my question, and I was hoping to see it from the report, is that women that have been experiencing a substance abuse problems before their incarceration, is there any program working together with the social workers as well as the Department of Social Development to put them through a program of rehabilitation as it relates to their issues that they have experienced with substance abuse? I'm happy with the issue of mental health, though we know that in terms of the availability of human resources in psychologists and social workers to help women deal with their mental health issues, especially those that have been abused prior to their incarceration. Excuse me, Chair. But I'm fully covered with the honourable members in relation, Chairperson, to the fact that these reports have been done 4 to 3 years ago, and what has been the progress. And since, you know, that circumstances change, but I know that in terms of the progress, in terms of the recommendation, implementation of the recommendations, one would like to hear how far the Department of Correctional Services has gone towards implementing the recommendations appearing in the report. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Masiko. Honorable Kumalo.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you to CGE for the presentation, and thank you, Chair, for allowing me to ask a question, even as a visitor. I'm pretty covered, mostly in the two questions that you posed, Chairperson, because those are really pertinent questions in not just improving conditions of the inmate, but also to warrant the use of the that were put into carrying out the research. Just a quick one on methodology to save time. It was mentioned in the presentation that semi-structured and structured questions were used. I just want to find out if these were in person. I do take note that there was mention of an interpretation services that were available. However, also not much of the setting of the field for data collection was described. So if we can just get a little bit more idea around that. I also wanted to ask Chairperson, how many participants...
Dr. Kumalo, sorry to interrupt you. This one, it brings me the issue of them not getting cooperation in those prisons. So I was asking myself that if they were doing a research and in terms of the methods and the samples that we're using, how did they acquire data? The staff, the prison warders or the inmates, they were not cooperating with them. I was a little bit confused. But I didn't want to raise it.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really warranted worry, Chairperson, because it would also then give us a little bit better idea around whether we can make generalizations after the study, or, you know, if they interview 3 people out of 100 people, it's a significantly small number to even make a generalization. So it is very important for us to understand how many participants participated, how many of those were inmates out of, so that we actually understand, the weight of the data that was collected and the impact that we can use from there. And lastly, Chairperson, on the issue of the nutrition, as far as the pregnant women are concerned, I just wanted to find out, I did hear that the data that was collected kind of insinuates that a lot of it is more opinion, but we do know that there's, scientific, knowledge that we know, guidance in terms of nutritional needs for pregnant women. So just wanted to find out, never mind the food stuff that they are having, are these women being provided with supplements? Because that would be then critical, and it would in fact kind of alienate the opinion of whether a seed bread is healthier than, your normal Sasco bread. I don't want to get into that argument, but rather, are they actually being given supplements during their pregnancy? I also was curious, Chairperson, as to extent of the care for the babies and children of the inmates. It was not elaborated much in the report, or would that mean that the same level of care or rationale applied to caring and looking after the inmates also apply to the babies and children? If that would be the case, it would be quite worrisome, as we all know that the needs of adults and children are very different in as far as our human rights are concerned as well. But perhaps we can get clarity on that. Without wasting time, Chairperson, I do think you asked and covered the most important aspects as it relates to this research in terms of the implementations of the recommendations from the research. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Khumalo. Honorable Ngoba.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've been partly covered by honorable members, just a few questions. The first one is also the question that you asked. Thank you. Chairperson, I also wanted to ask if the CGE has shared the reports and the recommendations with the Department of Justice or of Correctional Services, and it has a way to monitor the implementation of these recommendations. And also, I want to know if the CGE has any plans to undertake similar studies in other correctional facilities across the country. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ngobo. Honorable Songo.
Thank you very much, Chair. Greetings to yourself and honorable members, also NCGE Chair. Chair, I think I am also covered by yourself and other honorable members, because the questions I had were basically on the issue of the study or the report being done back years ago. Wamimbuto was to say, is there another study that's going to be done, Chair? Because if this is a study of 3 or 4 years ago, then I feel there should be a study that's being done again that includes the other prisons. Because like Honorable Ngo, I think, mentioned that only 6 prisons were mentioned here, and akhona lamanye ama prisons ebafati in South Africa. And also, Chair, I want to check the issue of contraceptives for female inmates. They are there, and if it's a way, and I think the Beganjan is in this matter, by a fundiswa ngawo or the Department of Health do approach them, go to their contraceptives, this is what must happen, and they decide that we don't need it. I'm just asking this for concern's sake, Chair. Thanks.
No, it's the right question, Honorable Song. It's the right question. Thank you very much, honorable members. I think we have noted all honorable members, unless there's somebody else that I omitted. Okay, let's hear from CGE. Over to you, CGE.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair and members, I will defer some of the questions to commissioners and try to respond to some that I am sure of, so to speak. The question of sharing the report with the Department of Correctional Services, there were follow-up questions relating to that, including sharing the report with other relevant departments that are implicated in the findings of this report. For this specific report, this is one of the areas that I will request my commissioners to assist. But in general, I do know that many of our reports we do present to the relevant departments, and I know that sometimes we are requested by the relevant portfolio committees to come and present. This has happened a lot, especially last year, and also this year we've had some presentations done. But the chair.
CEO.
Yes, ma'am.
We don't want a general statement.
Okay.
We don't want that.
Okay. No, thank you, Chair. I will ask my commissioners to assist whether this particular report was presented to the DCS. In terms of the report being old and relating to the latest questions, what will there be a follow-up study perhaps? Chair, I run the risk of generalizing because the CGE do follow-up studies after a couple of years of conducting research. And as far as I know, there hasn't been a follow-up study on this. And we are currently in the CGE discussing a research agenda. These are some of the things that inform our work in terms of responding to advice or the needs or the oversight recommendations of the committee. So that's one of the things that I would want to put forward. Honorable Sharif asked about whether the question of assessing if the DCS upholds human rights was not answered in the presentation. And I want to note that and say perhaps it would have helped to have a concluding slide, because this was presented in the separate sentence in terms of how the human rights of inmates were violated in certain instances where examples were given. But a note to be taken is one should have a summary that say yay or nay in terms of the research question. The issue of lack of information and in terms of the limitations also relating to the number of people who were interviewed. In slide 6, there is a table that provides the numbers of inmates, officials, wardens that were interviewed in this study, and perhaps to also indicate that these were done physically. These were focus group discussions with these participants where there was interviews, it was physical interviews with the relevant officials, and those interviews were verified through the collection of relevant documents that would support
what was being said by participants. And also in the methodology, we indicated that some observations were also done in order to verify the information that was indicated by participants. But the general limitation here is, and this is what I had indicated when I said generally in our research, because we are monitoring the implementation of commitment, government's commitments in service delivery, you find that sometimes people are not free to say, you know, things. And a word was used in this presentation, in fear of repercussions. For instance, when you have focus groups with inmates, all the witnesses, this is where the witnesses all came out, what is happening, their experiences. But when you speak to officials, you get a different view of that. But generally, people are not necessarily free to speak out. This happens in different kinds of research, but we do get at least the information that tells us, that gives us the picture in terms of what is happening in these entities. excuse me. The other comments we have noted in terms of the question of how many recommendations were implemented. Again, as far as I know, there's no follow-up study on this. And I suppose a follow-up study needs, obviously, we would have to look at that in terms of how far the implementing agencies have gone since these recommendations were made.
CEO.
Yes, ma'am.
What were you saying about the methodology? Because the methodology is critical here.
Yes.
If the methodology is flawed, then the findings are flawed.
Yes. Yes.
So what we need to understand as the portfolio committee is the methodology that was used.
Yes.
So I want you to respond to that one.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
When I spoke to the issue of the methodology in terms of the semi-structured and structured questionnaires, I think the question was whether these were done physically. Another question was how many participants were interviewed. And the response I had provided was that these were done in person. These were focus group discussions that were conducted separately for inmates, officials, and wardens. And I pointed out to slide 6 where there are numbers in terms of how many wardens and inmates and so forth participated in the study. And I also said in that regard, where the interviews and focus groups were done, observations, physical observations of the facilities were also done to verify what was being said. That's why in the presentation you have centers that are said to be derelict or dilapidated and so forth, and others that are said to be very well maintained and so forth. And then we also compiled documents, again, to validate the information that we received from the participants. So that's what I was explaining, Madam Chair, in terms of the methodology that was used.
Yes, done.
I'm just going through my notes, Honorable Chair, to see if I can cover anything else before my commissioners come in.
I think many of the comments that we have noted in terms of some of the services that are provided in the facilities where our recommendations should focus. And one of the comments was about recommendations relating to the lack of supplies for mothers and babies, and how some centers depend on NGOs. I think one of the weaknesses is that in a presentation, the information is summarized, but there is a recommendation that the department need to have formal agreements with stakeholders that are supporting these centers so that the relationship is sustainable in terms of how they support the centers. So the strategy that is recommended is supposed to be, it does say they must include formalizing this response, these relationships, so that they can be sustained. I think I will stop there, Madam Chair, and hand over to my commissioners. Thank you.
CEO, the first mistake that you have committed now is,
yes, ma'am,
you can't, one, you are an accounting officer. As an accounting officer, you are here in Parliament to account on behalf of your institution.
Yes.
That's one. Two, you can't delegate to commissioners. You're not the chairperson of the commissioners. So these two roles must be clearly differentiated and identified, because you see, you will fight with the commissioners, because you don't have authority to delegate anything to them. The only person who have powers to delegate commissioners is the chairperson. So I thought that I need to correct you, so that you must not commit this mistake again.
Thanks, ma'am.
And when you are responding to questions, respond to questions. And if there's something that you need the researchers themselves, Yabo, to add, ask the researchers to respond on that, Yabo, because they are the ones who are doing these things. So they need to respond, and they will need an accurate answer, so that it must look professional. Because we don't need, it's serious, you know, we're dealing with serious matters and the public. So we don't want to find ourselves in hot water. But thank you very much. We are done with your response. Let's get the chair. I think my other question is that, is there a link between your research unit and your legal unit? Because I think that is also important. Or AMA researchers, when they just do research or for the sake of ticking the box? Because I think in some, yeah, you want to let them iPhone, Mam Soji. In terms of you mute your mic.
I'm raising my hand, Chair.
Yeah, madam, sakulum, we raise our hands and send them sakulum.
Then the fell.
Yeah, sakulum. Yes, you send the sakuf, Vali Mike. Your researchers, Chair, when they do research, I take it that it's because we have also identified the need for you to do the research. So that's why I'm asking, Oguti, is there a link between your research unit and your legal unit? Over to you, Chair.
Thank you for the opportunity, Chairperson. Honorable Chair, I'll get straight to the question that was asked directly and which was also a concern for quite a number of honorable members, and give a very brief but very straight answer, Chair. The question was whether, and this question was raised by you first, Chair, and then by honorable members, whether these reports or this report was shared with the Department of Justice, Department of Correctional Service, and whether this report was tabled in a portfolio committee relevant. Chair, to respond to your question, the report, as soon as we are done with the report, including this one, in 2018, when we finalized the report, we presented the report in 2018 to the management of the Department of Correctional Services. So management, meaning we request a sitting, a formal sitting with the management, and then a date is given, and then we sit down with the management, and then we table the report, and we leave copies of the report with the department or the management of the department. Then the process that followed was that the report was also presented in the very same year, in 2018, to the Portfolio Committee on Correctional Services, after we had presented it to the head office of the Department of Correctional Services in Pretoria. So it was presented in Parliament to the committee on the very same year. And I remember in that particular year, in 2018, the Minister of Correctional Services was present, when we presented the report. And Chair, I still want to look at my recollection whether the minister at that time was Honorable Patekile Holomisa, but I still want to think that it was Minister Patekile Holomisa, Chair, who was the minister. But the report was tabled with the department, and it was tabled with the portfolio committee. Notwithstanding what you are saying, Chair, in terms of these reports released in time and also tabled in time, I think we need to work out a strategy, Chair. And perhaps this is something that we will go back as we do our strategic plan, to say that which are the new reports that are coming out that need tabling with relevant portfolio committees, so that we do this immediately with relevant departments as well as relevant portfolio committees, so that it doesn't take 3 to 4 years for these reports to be tabled in departments and in portfolio committees. And I also like what Honorable Mkhithi, I think it was Honorable Mkhithi, said or suggested that perhaps a joint committee chair would be appreciated. I think this is one area that I once mentioned last year, to say that perhaps we would write to this particular portfolio committee, so that when we have reports such as these, whether they are investigative reports or research reports, we could write to the chair of this committee to really request a portfolio committee, a joint sitting of the portfolio committee, so that we can table some of these reports in a joint portfolio committee, Chair. And I want to mention that is coming, is the work that we are doing as a Commission for Gender Equality in terms of monitoring the SAPs. Perhaps we will take exactly the same recommendations that honorable members are talking about as soon as we are done with monitoring the South African police services in various provinces, and as we are monitoring the Thuthuzela care centers, we will definitely take that approach of presenting to the relevant department immediately, and also presenting to the portfolio committee and suggesting a joint sitting chairperson. Thank you very much. I just want to talk about the mental health issue, Chair. And I fully agree, Chairperson, that the issues of mental health are neglected, not only in prisons for inmates, as well as for other officials that are dealing with inmates. But also, I think there was a reference to the traumatic situations with people that are handling gender-based violence and femicide that we see today, not only government officials, but also NGOs, whether these people are getting any debriefing sessions, organized or not organized, but whether there is any follow-up in terms of frontline workers, especially during the time of COVID. And these are some of the things that we are beginning to stress, Chair, even when we go and monitor the Thuthuzela care centers and the SAPs. This is the language that we are currently talking about and looking at whether those services are there. But Chair, I want to say that during COVID-19, we attended quite a number of mental health awareness webinars, because again, I know that this is such a neglected area with long-term impact that, during this, trying time, people are really suffering from, mental health in different forms. And this is something that we definitely need to look at and not to withstand, especially during Mental Health Awareness Month. These are some of the issues that we need to elevate as CGE through our PEI programs and other programs, Chair. But I think the mental health one is important. When we had our webinar on SRHR last year, these are some of the issues that we elevated, Chair, to say that we need to look at mental health issues. And I think also our reports should speak to that. And I'm sorry if this was not really elevated, but I think we are becoming more and more aware that mental health issues are neglected up by various stakeholders, CGE included in our program. Chair, there was a question that you asked about the link between the research and the legal unit. Chair, in answering this question, I just want to say that one of the very important key issues that we've been raising as commissioners, I think in our committees as well as in plenaries, is that as a commission, we need to set a very clear research agenda that needs to follow by the committee, to look at issues that need to be researched on. And we need to follow our research agenda informed by what is happening around us, but also it must be informed by what is emerging around us in South Africa and the world. And these are some of the issues that we're talking about, Chair. We have just come out of the APP planning process as well as the strategic planning process, and this was an issue that we really about to say, let's not just willy-nilly do research. It must actually, we must be guided by a research agenda that must inform us that this particular issue needs to be researched, it needs to be looked at, it needs to be monitored, and we need to make recommendations around it. So we have an agreement internally, Chair. The linkages between the research and the legal units, these linkages, Chair, haven't been strong. They have not been strong at all. And this is one area that we have looked at. And I must say that the research and education chairperson, Dr. Emliko, as well as the legal chairperson, advocate Sepanya Mukhale, are actually looking at how we can actually strengthen these linkages between the two units in the CGE, so that we can look at the areas that need investigation, we can look at the areas that need research. And when we produce reports that are beginning to speak to issues that these two units need to look at and need to follow up in terms of making sure that there is a response to our binding recommendations, there is follow-up in terms of implementation of our findings within this week. Thank you very much, Chair. I will pause here.
So there's no other commissioner at the Kuruma, Chair?
Chairperson, I will check with commissioners if they want to make any submission. Can I start with Commissioner Sepanya Mogale, who is responsible for the legal unit, chair of the legal and investigations subcommittee. Commissioner Sepanya Mogale, over to you.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I think you have captured the essence of where we are going, so I don't have anything to add. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much, Advocate. Hey. Honorable Songo. Honorable Songo. If the commissioners are done, okay.
Sorry, Chair. I just wanted to check with, in the absence of the Deputy Chairperson, Dr. Maliko, I just want to give the opportunity to Commissioner Nduli Dlouba-Tla, who sits in the research and education, as well as Commissioner Mutupi, to just come in if any comments. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Commissioner Dlouba-Tla.
Thank you, Chairperson. We have noted matters that have been raised by the members of the portfolio committee. They are in on point. Tina, as the Commission for Gender Equality, should take the advice and move forward. And I also need to emphasize that true indeed, for us to do research and without fully sharing and also without fully implementing the recommendations, at the end of the day, it's money not well spent. So on areas where we feel we are lacking as a commission, in that regard, we will act as expected. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Mutupi.
Thanks, Chair. Commissioner Nduli Dlouba-Tla and the Chair has covered me. I do not have additions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Any follow-up question, honorable members? Dr. Honorable Kumalo, Honorable Sharif, over to you, Honorable Kumalo.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks to the colleagues for all the responses. Chair, I suppose I'm on the back foot in the sense that I don't really have the presentation, but maybe I'll make my question more direct. In terms of what the ratio was of the inmates that participated versus those who didn't, and the same with the wardens. If I can just get a percentage there, I don't need 500 out of 600 that deep, but maybe just the ratio between the two groups that participated. I'm also curious just to find out from the researchers, having carried out the study, they have now, clarified that it was focus groups. Do the researchers believe focus groups are the most suitable method to get the most accurate experiences of the inmates, especially, Chairperson, given the known considerations around the power dynamics that exist in our correctional service facilities, both in as far as the inmates are concerned and the wardens themselves. So I'm curious as to find out whether or not they believe perhaps in future they should consider research that considers or, prioritizes privacy as an ethical consideration, moreover, in as far as the methodology is concerned, so that we can get rich and authentic data from the participants without any either intimidation or people feeling they can't speak up completely or be truthful because the majority around the focus table or focus group is saying one thing. Generally, focus groups would be ideal for topics that aren't as sensitive as what we are looking at here. So perhaps in future, just an opinion after they have carried out this research, if there could have been an opportunity to have used a different method. Thanks, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Kumalo. Honorable Sharif?
Thank you very much, Chair. Just a quick follow-up. Since
tabling this report to the relevant management as well as the PC. What has been the outcome? Have you done any follow-ups to see if any of your recommendations have been implemented, or is nothing happening? Just a brief on what's the update 4 years later. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any other member? No one? It was only the two of you. Oh, Ma'am Sonti?
Thank you, Chairperson. Apology, man, for the mistake I did. Chairperson, when this is I've given the questions to the CGE, so I don't know if there was an answer on that, because I was kicked out by the network. Also, we don't have electricity here. My phone will gonna die right now. But if they answered me, it's covered, Chairperson. I don't have any problem. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, honorable members. Chair, I think firstly, the recommendations that you are making is that these reports must also be tabled to other portfolio committees so that they can go through them, especially a portfolio committee on justice and correctional services, but also the portfolio committee on health, because there are many issues of health that honorable members have raised in this meeting. But also
those issues are also captured by your report, including social development. I think the one that will be a challenge for all of us is the one of mental health, which maybe we'll have to think on how are we going to deal with this matter, because it's not only us in the as a country that is having a problem here in mental health, but I think now we need to do something about it, because it's a very big challenge for all of us, so we need to deal with it. We'll think on how then do we deal with it as the portfolio committee. And also, Chair Nani, you need to think on how do you engage the Department of Health regarding issues of mental health. You know, when I was serving with Portfolio Committee of Health in the previous term, you know, our chairperson for the Portfolio Committee on Health, it was one issue that she will raise each and every meeting with the Department of Health. So I think that one also, as the Portfolio Committee on Women, is one issue that we need to take it up with the Portfolio Committee on Health. Maybe we'll also have to invite the Portfolio Committee on Health and also the Department of Health on how are they dealing with issues of mental health, because they are affecting women mostly. We are the ones who are carrying a burden of issues that are affecting the mental health of our children, especially because you can see even at universities, young people, they find themselves having that problem at the higher learning institutions, even at home. During issues like gender-based violence, women are also getting affected with the issues of mental health. So it's one issue that we need to take it up as the portfolio committee, and so that we push whoever is supposed to take full responsibility in dealing with the issues of mental health. I think we have come to the end of this report. We have done justice because we dealt with it, and let's go to the next report. Nelly, what is the next report? Chair, I think your commissioners will then, when you come back to the portfolio committee, update us on how are they going to deal with the issues, the research, and linking them with the illegal units, because I think it's important.
We will do so, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. The next report, Chair. Nelly, what's the next report?
It's the two reports, Chair, on elections. The one is reviewing development in women's representation in politics and government between 2014 and 2019 elections. And the other one is bound by duty to care. It's a report on election and gender mainstreaming, assessing gender issues and women's representation in South Africa, 2019 elections, Chair. Thank you.
Yeah, Ivan. I'm calling to report one. Chair, this Sunday. Nelisa.
Chair.
I'm calling to report one. Which I wrote to you Sunday.
Oh, okay. Let me go through them, Chair.
There were outstanding matters that we ECGE had to go and deal with. Regarding our decisions that were taken in the meeting, you can't be saying, Mfunugyofuna, Funa in, I wrote to you on Sunday. And I even called you.
Yes, Chair, thank you. I wanted to.
But I said we must deal with these reports today, finish them.
Okay, Chair.
What about the report today? Sort out that report, I need it. Over to you, Chair. I need that report today. Over to you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would request the CEO to present the reports on elections quickly at the same time, Chair, because they speak to each other. Cognizant of the time, Chair, that we don't have time on our side, if the CEO can just quickly go through the two presentations. Of the elections 2014-2019, respectively. Thank you, Chair. Over to you, CEO.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Chair. The next report I will present is the Women's Representation and Participation in Politics and Government 2014 and 2019. My apologies, I'm just aligning my screen. The current report mainly focuses on the 2014 elections, but just before the 2019 elections, an assessment was done to see, to be able to compare a year later when the actual elections happened in 2019. So the report is a bit long. I will try to skim through it where the information is not necessarily of key. And that is the structure that it will take in the... one of the introductory parts of the presentations, Honourable Chair and members, is where we provide the background, the legislative background that informs the work that we do. And in this regard, and again, we mention the Constitution, the CEDAW articles, the Article 25 of the International Covenant. All these instruments provide some relevance in terms of informing the particular piece of work that we are doing. So in terms of the background to the study, the CGE generally conducts this research on elections as they happen. And prior to this, they had conducted the local government elections in 2011. Then you have the 2014 national provincial and the local government elections of 2016. This is just by way of background in relation to that. So as I've indicated initially, the forthcoming then a report on elections would be the 2019 that I will present after this one. Quickly, just to mention that this the CGE sent election observers, observer teams to all nine provinces to observe voting-related processes, and then we published the reports thereafter. In terms of the method and approach of the study, for this particular study, six major political parties that were represented in the National Assembly were observed in terms of assessing their policy programs to promote gender equality. And the six were the ANC, DA, COPE-UDM, IFP, and Freedom Front. So those were the main focus. And what was examined and analyzed was the gender composition of the party candidate list to determine the comparative proportions and placing of females and male candidates in the lists. Also, the content of the party manifestos were examined from a gender perspective. The election observers also observed voting processes at selected voting stations in all the provinces. And for this particular one, the total voting stations observed were 217. The outcomes were analyzed to determine the gender balance among elected representatives in the National Assembly, the NCOP, and all the nine provincial legislature, national and provincial cabinets. As I indicated briefly, the presentation also contained some then latest information where in 2018, a year before the main elections, a quick assessment was done on women versus men's representation in national and provincial institutions of government. And we collected information and reviewed current levels of gender representation in the National Assembly and those other government institutions. And this was in preparation for the 2019 elections. In terms of the pre-election findings, the CGE found that the majority of the parties identified mentioned the scourge of gender-based violence and proposed number of strategies in their manifestos. This was clearly to as the GBV scourge was beginning to be visible, so to speak, in the country. It looks like focus was put on that mainly in the manifestos. The policies proposed in the manifestos were deemed gender neutral, clearly assuming that the benefits that are envisaged in these manifestos would automatically benefit both genders equally, which is a weakness or a gap that we have generally when we don't have specifically targeted objectives in whatever it is that we do. The parties were also unclear on what strategies they intended to put in place to address specific policy issues pertaining to gender equality. a number of key policy issues critical to gender equality emanating from both international and regional treaties were not visible in the party manifestos. And this, as we will see, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members and Commissioners, speaks to that situation where you find that issues of gender mainstreaming sometimes are like a tick box. As long as we talked about gender-based violence, we are fine. We don't have to go too far. And where manifestos were clear about gender mainstreaming and gender equality issues, the focus would predominantly be on women and children and silent on other marginalized groups like the LGBTIQ plus communities. So again, that challenge we have around mainstreaming prevailed when you looked at the pre-election manifestos of parties. The party lists, as projected there by party, we can see that only the ANC had the 50-50 representation in their party list, followed by the IFP, all the way down to the Freedom Front Plus as the lowest in terms of women's representation. In continuing to the overview of the party lists now by a political party, we found that the ANC was actually the only party that adopted a zebra stripe candidate placement system for male and female candidates on their list. Although, again, when you go to nuances, you'll find that the candidates, the higher you go, the more male it becomes. So that, again, is not necessarily a surprise in many of these studies. And the ANC had always voluntarily adopted the 50-50 quota policy for its party list. And actually, like I said, this is the only party that has actually made visible efforts to try and promote gender representation, especially during elections as well as other processes. The IFP had a 48% overall representation in 2014 in their party list, which was an improvement when we look at the percentages there from 2009. The party had almost achieved a 50-50, it can be said, as we said, it was 50-48 in the graph that I just presented. But again, what is common is that the majority of candidates represented at the higher structure of the party are males as opposed to females. And COPE had a female candidacy of 43%. Their national, regional, provincial candidate lists were dominated by male candidates. Men were largely placed at higher at the top of the party's list. And COPE did not have a formal policy quota for the party list. And Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, you will note the commonalities in what one usually says these are characteristics of patriarchal societies. So even where the parties are better than others and so forth, you see a trend that the higher you go, the male the candidacy becomes. Similarly with the DA, the women made up 35% of the party list. The party placement of candidates in the party's list followed a pyramid pattern with fewer women higher up and more at the bottom. Again, it's a repetition of what I just mentioned. And the party's national, regional, and provincial lists were dominated by males. Like other opposition parties, the DA also did not have an official voluntary quota policy, on gender representation. But when this was probed further, the party indicated that they subscribe to a policy of equal opportunity. And I think we are familiar with the debate around that. The UDM had a 31% female representation. The list had only 19 women and 48 men. There was a large gap between men and women, basically, in this party list. The regional list had nearly doubled the number of men compared to women, and the party's provincial list showed men were in the majority in all 9 provinces. So, Honourable Chair and members, I think this particular information sort of like gives one pretty much similar picture. While it indicates more effort from some parties and not so much effort from other parties, but the pattern in the way that the lists manifest seems to be similar, mainly because the higher you go, the more male they become. The findings on election days in terms of the voters, and this is women voters across the 3 years that were compared. As we can see, the numbers are stable and the numbers represent statistics in terms of the population of women in the country. But obviously a bit higher at 55 and 56. So as we can see, the numbers have been stable. Women have been participating in a consistent manner, at least if we talk about these three election years. Some of the things that were observed during the election day were the visibility of the police, which as the CGE we appreciated because that indicated that there will be at least more safety, especially for women voters. We also observed that there was what some would call a triage during the processes of queuing, where pregnant women, women with children, the elderly, and so forth, were given priority to go ahead in the queue and vote. But another observation was that although special days are given for different groups of people in the elections, even on the general election day, you still found people like the elderly women, pregnant women, and so forth, still participating in voting. It was noted that access to polling stations had improved compared to the previous CGE observations. Female staff representation in all polling stations observed by the CGE was higher than that of males, as well as in the election observers. However, we found that the polling staff allocation in urban middle-class areas was higher than in rural areas, squatter camps and townships, which resulted in longer queues in these geographic areas. We also found that the polling stations in poor communities were inadequately resourced compared to air-conditioned spacious police stations in well-off areas. And Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, I suppose this is familiar in terms of the history of the country, again, in different research projects. When you look at the previously advantaged and disadvantaged areas, you still see that consistent picture continuing, much as
we have made very significant strides. In terms of the post-election findings results in the National Assembly, we observed that there was a 3% drop in women's representation from the 40% that was achieved in 2014 compared to 43% in 2009. So that drop was observed in 2014, which came after a steady increase of women. If you look at from the very first elections, where we started from about 28%, and we gradually moved up and until we dropped back in 2014 by the 3% indicated. So in the National Assembly, the information notable was that there were improvements for women's representation. Nevertheless, than a year prior to the elections in 2018, where the figures show a 3% improvement in women's representation in the National Assembly. And this is where that preparatory assessment was done. So by way of graphically demonstrating this, we can see how we move and drop back in 2014. But in 2018, with the informal assessment, I will call it, because it wasn't an election year, we found that we had improved before we went into the 2019 elections. As indicated earlier, of the political parties that were assessed, the ANC had the highest level of women's representation in the National Assembly at 49%, followed by the EFF, who was then a newcomer at the time, and then followed by COPE, and as had been demonstrated earlier, all the way down to 20% from the IFP. The Freedom Front Plus had performed worse with zero representation of women in the National Assembly in our findings. So this again is just a graphic depiction of the picture in 2014. In as far as the National Assembly was concerned. And the data in 2018 had revealed improvements in the representation of women. And then for the following major political parties, the representation of women had stayed the same or improved. So the improvements are not that significant, but things changes as we will go to the next presentation. We will see that some things have gotten better and others have not, so to speak. The Freedom Front, as indicated, was the only party that didn't have women in its in the National Assembly, and again a graphic representation of the comparisons in 2014 and the 2018 assessment that was done in preparation for the 2019 elections. In terms of the NCOP, after 2004, the NCOP had 41% women representation. But this declined until 2014, where the figure dropped to 30% in the 2009 elections and further 28% in 2014. However, when we looked at the figures in 2018, it appeared that there was some increase in women's representation from 28 to 37%, as I will indicate in the next slide. So basically, this is comparing the across the years. When you look at 2014, the 28% and in 2018, this has improved. And I think here what is commendable is that there were no elections. So one can see that processes do happen that improve the situation, not only during elections, but even in between election years, as we have found in 2018. In terms of cabinet, obviously the president and the deputy president were male, but this was accompanied by a small drop in the number of women ministers from 41% in 2009 to 40% in 2014. And this was an overall steady decline since 2004, if we look at the percentages there as they go from 43, 41, and then 40. However, the steady decline in the number of women cabinet ministers was accompanied by up and down fluctuation in the number of women deputy ministers, dropping from 50% in 2004 to 39% in 2009, then up to 47 in 2014. I think what's interesting, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, is perhaps the observation of this fluctuation. I know that, again, there are debates in terms of what is causing this fluctuation, but I think what it says to us is that these fluctuations need to be observed and attended to as required, because it doesn't make sense for the fluctuations to happen the way they are happening. And this graph is just showing the representation of women ministers and deputy ministers in cabinet between 2004 and 2018. And as we can see, you see that up and down kind of process happening, which will be interesting, really, what exactly are the factors that lead to this up and down statistics in terms of women's representation in this leadership position. This is just a different depiction of the same presentation graph that I just depicted. In terms of provincial legislatures, between 1994 and 2009, this was characterized by an overall increase in women's representation at provincial level. And I think this was also aligned nationally when we look at statistics from 1994 onwards, you can see that the momentum was still high, so to speak, in terms of promoting gender equality in political participation. So similarly, this was reflected in the provinces, which was followed by a drop of 4%. So all the way to the 2014 elections, you see a drop happening. And in 2018, again, you saw an improvement. Pre-2019 elections, you saw a bit of improvement. And then of the six of the nine provinces, provincial legislatures had an increase in the number of women representatives since the 2014 elections. So when we looked in 2018, only one provincial legislature, which is Gauteng, has experienced a decline in the number of women representation since 2014. Two provincial legislatures have remained the same, and these were Mpumalanga and the Northwest. and again, just a graphic depiction of the provincial legislatures in terms of women's representation since 1994. You see the steady increase and then a steady decline, and in that fluctuation had happened, much as for some reason in 2018 you see improvements when you compare to the previous election year. This again, provincially, just comparing the changing representations in the provinces over the years from 2004 and to 2018, as we can see, the graph, the up and down, some is good, some is negative, but that fluctuation is constant. Though one must say in 2018, as one has already indicated, there seemed to be something that was happening that had improved the representation of women, particularly in provincial legislatures. In terms of provincial cabinets, we know that the reliable figures for provincial cabinets were not available for the period soon after 2014 elections. The current information that was in 2018 showed relatively gender balanced provincial cabinets in terms of the representation of women. And if we look provincially, the gender profile, we will see that the women are obviously slightly in the lower numbers, except for the Free State, where you had a 55% representation. In 2004, in terms of provincial premiers, they made up 44% of the total, and the figure went up to 55% in 2009, before it declined sharply to 22% after 2014. And I think maybe one would go to the graphic, to the table, to just to summarize the previous slide, as indicated in terms of the provincial premiers, where in 2018 the figures were less gender skewed, and again it's that improvement. So you had this 22% after the 2014 elections, but when we looked in 2018, this is how the picture looked, where it was almost 50-50 if our provinces form an odd number. So you can't have a straight 50-50, but it was pretty much there. Looking now at the national and provincial speakers and other office bearers, I, Honorable Chair, if you allow me, it's a long presentation. I want to try and speak to the graphics as they summarize the text that is in the presentation. So if you look at speakers and other office bearers, from 2009 to 2018, you see in 2009 you had significantly less women speakers and other office bearers, which improved in 2014 and stayed pretty much the same in 2018 when the pre-election assessment was done. In terms of chief whips and deputy speakers, the predominance of men over women was observed. The deputy speakers, this understandably as a result of the ruling party's decision to appoint more female speakers after the 2014 elections. Thus, the gender profile of chief whip's position seemed to reflect a continuation of political tradition or convention where such positions are predominantly held by males. And if we look at the numbers there in terms of provincial representations, we can see that in terms of chief whips, the males predominate. In terms of speakers, females predominated, as was indicated, due to the deliberate action taken in 2014, and deputy speakers, and then you have males dominating. In terms of party top leadership structures, as indicated, the higher you go, the more male the structures become. So that is the same picture. Data from 2018 on women's representation in top party structures showed an overall underrepresentation of women, which has not been surprising, with the exception of the EFF, where women's representation was lower than half of the membership of the top leadership structure of the other selected political parties that were observed. And the Freedom Front remained the only party without women. So if we look at the party top leadership structures by party, we can see there that generally, the structures, as I said, the higher you go, the male they become. Some of the challenges and contributing observations pre-election period in 2014. Only the ANC had a voluntary quota for women, which is a good thing, but it's a challenge in a sense that of the six political parties, only one party seemed to be making an effort, so to speak. Also, it was the only party using the zebra stripe candidate list. Most political parties did not clearly and publicly prioritize gender issues in their manifestos. On election days, most of the voting stations observed were effectively administered, and as indicated, the queues were managed and triage was also conducted for the elderly and other groups of people who required assistance. The post-election issues include that women remained underrepresented in key elective public institutions compared to their male counterparts. They continue to be underrepresented within internal party senior leadership structures. In 2014, the national and provincial elections saw overall drop in the representation of women at national and provincial level. In 2018, there were improvements as indicated, but then that seemed to change as we continue with the observations. In terms of recommendations, one of the recommendations we put forward as the CGE is that civil society organizations and other stakeholders should maintain continuous vigilance over political parties and lobby them for gender parity within internal and external structures. And this shouldn't only happen during elections. Ideally, this should be part of the work that we do in the gender sector that we are not seen to care only during elections, but we do this work because by right, we should gender equality throughout, not only during specific periods in our country. We should continue working with other stakeholders to monitor gender efforts towards mainstreaming. And as indicated, it's a matter of a CGE program that all the elections at different levels of government are observed and reports produced and presented to the relevant stakeholders where possible. We also recommend that political parties adopt voluntary quotas for women's representation and participation while taking measures towards revising party policy and other documents such as constitutions and rules and candidates' nominations. And hopefully one could even say we should move from voluntary to compulsory. But that's another debate. And civil society should lobby for quotas to be legislated. I think that supports what I have just mentioned. Also, engagement with the IEC in terms of promoting gender mainstreaming through the electoral process, especially ensuring that political parties sign pledges to promote gender equality as part of the electoral code of conduct. So that mandatory kind of approach to this is just being emphasized. And the IEC is also urged to continue using media as an effective dissemination tool to popularize the special voting days, especially to target categories of voters, such as pregnant women, which they do, as we have seen even in the previous local government elections. And the IEC should ensure appropriate, equitable distribution of resources and voting stations between formal and informal areas and settlements. And this is one of the recommendations that, for me, can easily be addressed, because obviously we don't want the pre-1994 picture to prevail in terms of the haves and the have-nots, and it's up to us as state institutions, as delegated, to try and redistribute resources in a way that promotes transformation in this regard. That is the end of the presentation, Honorable Members, Chair and Commissioners. Thank you.
Thank you very much, CEO, for this presentation. You know, the disadvantage of this report is that one, there is no legislation or policy that compels political parties to implement a 50-50 gender parity like what the ANC is doing. In fact, in the ANC, we have a 50-50 a policy for gender parity, but it's not a government policy. So other parties, they've got their own policies also and their values. So it makes it difficult for us to do justice in terms of ensuring that we push for more women representation in government to be deployed by their political parties. That's one problem area that for as long as there is no legislation or a policy that guides us on what needs to be done, it's going to be a problem for us for a very long time. until maybe parties can change their ideology or their belief, and then they follow suit, they implement that policy according to what the ANC is doing. So you see, this also CEO, it's a problem because you can't even go to private sector and push them to employ women in those senior management positions. That's why even yourselves, I'm sure even when you do your research, you concentrate mainly in the public sector and leave out a private sector. But I'm not sure whether you have a responsibility as and when you do your work that you can propose such whether Parliament can and or other any other department or government can have a policy so that we ensure that in the country even private sector must do likewise. Because it's been a problem for years, and it's like even yourselves, I'm looking at what you are saying, Buti, you are not even thinking of proposing a legislation. Yes, you are saying we must speak to them nicely. So you see, when you speak to them nicely, you'll have that resistance from different political parties. Especially in a world that is male-dominated, patriarchy will continuously see it, and no one will be brave to do advocacy and for women. So women are the ones who do most of the groundwork and who benefit in those positions. It's males mainly who are benefiting in those critical positions. So it's a challenge. I'm not even sure whether it even needs the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities. They have something on how to address the issues that your report is raising. But anyway, thank you very much for the analysis that you have done for us. Let me hear from honorable members Uguti, what is their take? And the other thing that I was thinking, honorable members, looking at the time, I wouldn't want us to push to deal with the next presentation because, Mina, I don't want to do to get presentations and we don't engage on those presentations. I want us to do justice when we are doing our work. So I think the next report and the report that I was asking Uneliswa about we'll have to allocate, set aside another day where the CGE is coming to present to the portfolio committee. But in that report, Chairperson, I've seen a letter that they've written to yourself regarding that report that I was talking about. It's something that we can ask you here and you respond promptly because it's things that you're supposed to go and do. So if we take decisions in the meeting and you go back to your institution, what we expect from you is to go and compile those reports as per the decisions of the meeting. So I think we'll give you a day in 2 weeks' time so that you come back and present that report to the portfolio committee. This report that you are supposed to present now and the report that they sent you a letter, Chair, because that is an obligation and it's a commitment that was made in the portfolio committee. Those issues that are there are clear. What is it that you need to do as an institution? So we'll give you 2 weeks and we'll set a date aside so that you come and make a presentation of that report and the other report that you're supposed to present today due to time constraints. But now I will allow all honorable members to engage on this one. Can I get hands? CEO, may you please remove your report in the screen? Yes, thank you very much. Can I get hands, honorable members? Over to you, honorable members. Honorable Masiko. Honorable Mamsonti. Anginiboni izandla zenu, anisafuna ukukhuluma ama members. But maybe before honorable Masiko, Dr. Tembe. Amen.
Yebo, Chair.
I want to check with you. If my memory serves me well, last year, before we rise, there was an issue that we raised with your OISC regarding two commissioners who have applied for a full-time commissioner's post position, which you were supposed in your unit to make a follow-up with the presidency. Ukuthi, how far are you? Because we need to fill the two vacant positions of commissioners.
Okay, Chair, there was...
I think it was Commissioner Amazibuko and the... Dibiela, if I'm not mistaken. Chair, it was Mazibuko and Dibiela, if I'm not mistaken.
Chair, you are correct. It's Commissioner Nomasonto Mazibuko and Commissioner Dibiela Mutupi. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah. Chairman?
Yeah, there was a follow-up, Chair, I think yesterday, as of yesterday. There's a response, but I'll share with you, but it hasn't been finalized. There was a response from the president. Then I'll forward it.
So,
yeah, as of yesterday.
Okay.
Okay.
Please forward it to me, because I know I've got another meeting at 3, so if Ngifonela Masikhumala meeting.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, nilelo nisakhulume.
Asilele, Chair.
Oh, okay. Who's Mukes Mukhetseng Muye? Mukhetseng Kimang? Nelly, sir.
I'm just checking, Chair.
Oh, it's from PNG, Che. It's written next to his name, PNG.
So we've got only Honorable Masiko and who? And Mamsot. Honorable Masiko?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, for the opportunity to express myself on this matter. I think I'm just laughing that Honorable Members are not putting up their hands to speak, Chairperson, on this matter. And I think the reason
why... And it's unlike Honorable Sheriff.
It's unlike all Honorable Members, Chairperson. We are a committee of women with and persons with disabilities. And the issue of women and the challenges that are faced by young people of South Africa, as well as persons with disabilities, Chairperson, they cut across all political lines. Issues of women, you know no boundaries in terms of politics. And I think the fear that Honorable Members are having, I may be wrong, on speaking, Chairperson, on this matter is that we know that the problem lies with our very own political parties. And the minute we want to hold back in expressing the challenges that are faced by women within our own political parties, Chairperson, because for me, that's where the problem lies. We may speak through what is reflected on the report, on the representation of women in governance. But the problem starts with our own political parties. Because if we look at a proper analysis, Chairperson, on the representation of women in leadership structures in politics, we will get the same picture. We can't fail as political parties to give spaces to women at the top accolades of power and expect for us to then see them in government when we are not seeing them within our own political parties. It's a reflection of the current state of politics in South Africa. And the problem, Chairperson, is not only, you know, with a single party, but I think the problem is across. I will make an example, Chairperson. When we were going towards the local government elections, the systems that the different political party used to give us the candidates at a ward level, the outcomes that were presented and we saw within our street polls in terms of the faces that were there were faces of male candidates. And it's a system that is there within all, even though some political parties, not even some, our own, which is the African National Congress, speaks to issues of gender representation. But from the processes that we are having at a wide level, we are still seeing the ugly face of patriarchy in terms of the nomination processes of the candidates themselves. We do have a system that then speaks to the correcting it and ensuring that within the PR system we'll find women. But at a wide level, we are still having that representation of men coming out more than women. It's quite unfortunate, Chairperson, to say that, because we know that women, when it comes to the voting, you will find them in majority. And it's quite an unfortunate situation that the outcome that it gives in terms of the system will give us a male face rather than a gender balance face. I think, Chairperson, there must be some form of a change of attitude in terms of the perceptions, because we know that in terms of other political parties, they still remain gender blind. We can't be having a voice that says that we may the best men know that we are operating under a patriarchal system as South Africa. And we hope that, we keep our fingers crossed and hope that the systems that we are using within our political parties will give us a gender balanced outcome. So I think, Chairperson, I don't know whether the political parties have access to the report, and this report will be in all honesty discussed honestly within the political parties, because at the end of the day, we need to ensure that greater considerations must be taken for us to firstly have women on top in terms of the leadership within the political parties, so that system on its own will give us an outcome within the governance structures of the country and administration that will give us a gender balanced outcome. So it's important for us, Chairperson, to take these reports back to our political parties so that we are able to get an outcome that is favorable to women, who are also the greater part of the electorate of South Africa. So I think, in summary, Chairperson, the key barrier within for us to attain what we would be a favorable outcome for women is the party political practices that we are finding in South Africa, and the willingness of these political parties to see women at the top of their own structures in politics, but also on top of governance structures in South Africa. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Yeah, thank you very much, Honorable Masiko. I think that's why I was raising an issue of CGE recommending a policy, or even them maybe initiate that as a country, because they've already identified the gap. But there's the need for us to have legislation regarding the issue of gender parity, because it's amongst the issue of policy development and legislative initiatives. It's one of their key responsibility. And I belong in. That's what it is. So I suggest that maybe CGE on work in promoting the development of policy development and legislative initiatives. I think this is one issue that you must take it up so that we move forward as a country. Thank you very much, Honorable Masiko. Yeah, I'm disappointed that other honorable members, they don't want to speak in this item.
Chair, don't be disappointed, Chair. With all due respect, I just find it difficult to engage with the report that came out 8 years ago. Almost 10 years ago. If we were speaking about more relevant reports, absolutely I would engage. But 8 years ago, Chair, I was just graduating from university.
Okay. Yeah, no.
Yeah, the picture hasn't changed. It remains the same.
No, it's fine. Mam Santi, your hand was up. Mam Santi. Honorable Karen.
Chair, I'm here. It's just that I don't have much to say, but will agree with your summarizing that
we need to take this up with our political parties. But I'm safe because I'm from the ANC that is implementing the gender equity policy. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. Honorable Hlongo, speak for young people. Honorable Song.
Yes, Chair. Chair, I cannot raise up my... I know that, Chair, but this particular report, honestly, Chair, there is nothing I want to engage on. Thanks.
Are you satisfied with the young people representation?
Yes, I am, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Members. Over to you, CEO and the Chair. CEO?
Yes, ma'am.
Over to you and the Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I suppose these were comments that were provided, Honorable Chair, but perhaps to indicate that one of the discussions that we've been having as the CGE is exactly about implementing the aspects of our mandate that talks about initiating laws. And currently, as we develop the APP, the honorable members of the committee will see when we present that that will be one of the targets that we are planning to move towards. Thank you, Honorable Chair and members.
Can we see this one as your priority so that you can have a legacy at least during your term this legislation or policy was initiated by CGE? It will be a great achievement, especially for women of the country. Over to you, CEO.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Yes, as a collective in the CGE, we have already committed to it. And I must proudly say the conversation was initiated by commissioners. So we that's the road we take it. Thank you, okay. Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, CEO. Over to you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we're noting and we're taking comments by honourable members and by you, Chairperson, on the need for legislation. It's just to look at the process and take this conversation with the CEE, commissioners and management. Chair, I also just want to indicate that there were specific questions that were asked earlier by Honorable Khumalo on the previous report, especially on the methodology. I think we've taken this down, Chair. We will engage the researchers and then we will be able to provide that information about the ratios, ratio of inmates and officers that participated. I think that question came twice, Chair, and it was not responded to. So I think we commit that we will engage researchers on this particular question on methodology, but also on other questions, if not covered. Chair, I do take note that, perhaps just to do justice to our report, we need to make sure that we also allocate enough time to engage on the second report. And thanks a lot for giving us another 2 weeks to come and present the reports and the reports that were requested for by your office yesterday. We would look at that and then we will make submissions accordingly. But overall, I just want to, on behalf of the Commission, take this opportunity to thank honourable members for engaging with our report. And clearly, yes, the reports are old, but the picture hasn't really changed. I think we will also be coming with another report, the 2021 elections. It will be really interesting to look at how, whether we have moved or we haven't moved And perhaps these are some of the reports that we will present to the portfolio committee in time so that we can compare and contrast with the situation in 2014 and 2021. Thank you, Chair, and thank you to honorable members for the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. If ECGE can deal with this issue, gender parity before 2024, this will be a great achievement, can it? Our ministers will adopt them in the next meeting. If there's no announcement, Nelly, so is there any announcement?
Invitation that I've circulated to members from the department. It's a webinar on the gender responsive budgeting, and there was an email also that I circulated to members to register, and the link for that webinar will be sent directly to members' email. It's going to take place tomorrow. 10. Other than that, thank you, Chair.
Is CGE not invited in that dialogue? Chairperson?
Chair, we received an invite yesterday late. We are invited, Chair, and I think CGE is invited to also provide a message of support. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. I know that Commissioner Tlobatla, those issues are of her interest. I remember when I was even interviewing her, she spoke at length regarding those issues. Even now, as a commissioner, it's one of the issues that she always raises, issues of gender. Responsive budgeting. But thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much, Commissioners. And we've noted who are the Commissioners who are not part of this meeting. And thank you very much, Honorable Members. Honorable Khumalo, I'm sure you have enjoyed yourself in our Portfolio Committee. That this is one portfolio committee that does its work at its best. Our honourable members are committed to do the work. And
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you very much for your attendance also. And we've come to the end of our meeting. And next week, we'll be having CGE again and Human Rights Commission. Hopefully, Unelisa will then send all those reports to honorable members so that you can prepare. Thank you very much, honorable members. And the meeting is adjourned.
Hey, quick.